Swung on, lined to deep left field. It is gone! Hit well. Deep right. Batista's going to wave goodbye. Start the fireworks show.
This is the official Covering the Corner podcast, episode 188. I am your host, Matt Lyons. And on this week's episode, we got our first meatballs of the year, Stephen Kwan's historic start to his career, talk about our thoughts one turn through the Cleveland Guardians rotation, talk about everybody's favorite player, the one everybody's talking about right now, of course, Owen Miller. Is he back? Is he good now? What's going on with him? Talk about Miles Straw, Jose Ramirez, Emmanuel Clase all being extended. Who could be next? And just generally talk about a pretty downright exciting week, or weekend, I guess, of Cleveland Guardian baseball. Joining me for all that more of them is Merritt Rolfing. Merritt, how you doing?
Horrible. Just horrendous. I got tricked again by small sample sizes.
I got excited by winning two games against a bad team.
No, I was researching my meatball, and I just discovered, I was like, oh my god, this is crazy. Six of the nine guys in the Guardians batting order that played yesterday, Sunday, and today, Monday, were at the very worst in the 86th percentile in whiff rate. It's like, wow, this is their new thing. Not, getting guys who are very high contact. And then I realized that we're four games into this season and nothing matters, because I looked back 1 year and I was like, boy, even Ahmed Rosario really high up there. No, he was like a 45th percentile last year. So
this is a much better way than, I feel like we usually start the year terribly, which I guess we sort of did, but after the first couple of games it rebounded. So it's nice being actually excited after the first series. I feel like the last few years have always been like, well, this sucks. It'll get better when the weather gets warmer, but at least we got a couple good offensive games out of it. I mean, two back-to-back 10-run games is not something I expected at all from this team, let alone in the first week of the season.
Well, and, also, too, it's like, how mad can you be about two games that were decided basically on the edge of a coin? You know what I mean? Like, it sucks to lose 2-1 in extra innings on some BS to, the Royals especially, the most BS team there is. But hey, what are you going to do? I mean, they made plays and Cleveland didn't, and there you go. You move on.
You know what else doesn't ever move on?
What if they're throwing down a hill of cheese?
Meatballs. Double nice. Meatballs, Merritt. Meatballs never move on. Of course, this is our first of the year, our first set of games. This is just our way to serve up meatballs of nuggets of information and fun things we learned about the Guardians last week. So I feel like mine is unique and nobody's thought about it yet. So I'm going to let you go first, just because we'll save mine for the second one.
I've got two. It's so special. Actually.
I'll forget that. Yeah, you go first and then we'll sandwich me in the middle.
No, the first one's pretty quick. Okay. And it kind of dovetails into a later conversation. As of today, 4/11, Owen Miller has more three-hit games in 2022 than he had in all of 2021.
That checks out. that makes sense logically based on how his last season went.
he had none last year, obviously. I think he had like 6 2-hit games. My actual meatball, in the last 2 days, the Guardians scored 27 runs. The last time, that's most they've scored in a two-game span since 2016. That was a pretty good year, wasn't it, man?
I think that something special happened that year. I don't remember what it was.
They scored 28 runs in mid-May against the Reds over two games. That's right, Ohio Cup, baby. I also, in researching this, they did have a three-game stretch in May of 2019. They went 2-1 over this stretch. They scored 36 runs in three games. They scored 12, 11, and 13 runs. And right, that adds to 36, right? Close enough. Yeah, they went 2-1 because they lost one game like 13-11 or something like that. I was going to say Cardinals. I was just like, oh, God, sticks. Like, that shouldn't happen. You shouldn't score that many runs and lose. But I will say they almost pulled that off on Monday as well. So what are you going to go? So there you go. Offensive outburst, ebbs and flows, peaks and valleys, feast and famine. That's the way to describe this four-game wraparound series. Kind of weird that it was four games. But what are you gonna
It seems like forever ago that we were – I mean, the first two games seemed like forever ago when they couldn't score anything. And it seemed offense is doomed. And then all of a sudden they scored 17 runs and then 10 runs. And then tomorrow they face the Reds and we'll see how many they score then. But it's been a fun couple of days compared to the first couple.
And also, attendance figures are hilarious because
what are
the attendance figures at Kauffman Stadium?
Oh, yeah.
It went from anybody. 20,000 to 20,000 today on Monday. It was 8,000 people.
Speaking of today, the Guardians announced that they sold out the home opener. And I legitimately wonder how much of that is Stephen Kwan. I'm sure at least a handful of people were on the fence and then realized they might get to watch him play after this hot start. Watch him on, what is it, like Thursday or Friday, and decide, oh, we'll just go out and buy some tickets. Why not?
Plus,
they seem to be struggling there for a while. Yeah, I mean, they were letting you buy a ticket and get a free one. So,
well, this Hamilton wasn't like... was saying they had 750 seats left on Sunday. Time. So I don't know. It could be. It could not be. But hey, you know, maybe that last 700. Those are the Kwan holdouts.
Yeah, I assume this had to be a few because it's the excitement around Stephen Kwan and just this team in general. The last couple of days has
roiling.
It's honestly more than. In such a short span, it's like more excitement than I think I've seen since like 2017. Like before, after the World Series, before the next season, like when they signed Enwood, that's the highest like two period day of excitement I think I've seen in this organization since among fans.
Yeah,
is there anything else you can think of? I guess
I mean nothing lately.
That win streak,
you know, like we talked about, you know, the win streak probably at 22 games. Yeah. Other than that, like to start a season, I can't think of one because, like you were saying, like it's just. I feel like we've just been expecting just misery for the first however long for, you know, the first month or so for this team. Like they always start like 14 or 15 and they have a ripper of a May. And then you're like, oh, that's fine. So now we're good again.
And none of the rookies ever pan out this quick. Like not saying he has panned out already, but none of them have just performed so immediately like he has, like Stephen Kwan has. And it's pretty
even
fun to watch.
Francisco Lindor in his first 15 games was hitting .211. Like it just wasn't there. Like we were like, oh, come on, new guy, be good. Just poking him with a stick. Yeah, but four games in, he was hitting .267, .267, .267.
Yeah,
so
it's always been slow. And I'm sure Stephen Kwan will slow down after a few games. But
well, you know, he only went 1-for-3 with two walks on Monday, so.
Yeah, what a slacker. But let me my meatball, because we're going to talk about Stephen Kwan as a whole, but I'll just get my meatball out of the way quick because I think it's something everybody already knows, but I kind of wanted to point it anyway because, good Lord, it's amazing. The fact that he hasn't missed a single swing yet.
Yeah, it's crazy.
I mean, this should have maybe a tiny asterisk next to it because he did technically swing and miss, maybe, on Monday, but the umpire said he didn't, so he didn't. That's the way it works, Merritt.
Well,
the umpires are infallible. I never question them, personally.
Never have, never will. They are the wise men upon the field. Those with which we hang upon all honor, knowledge, and wisdom of the game of baseball. So
yeah, they said he checked his swing, so I believe them. I trust him. Not a single one other than that slightly questionable one. Hardly even any seeing strikes. He's got such a good view of the zone. Like I don't know how he does it with the leg kick he has and keeps his timing so well. But like you see him when he's timed up well. I think we're gonna be able to really tell when he's struggling, when the timing isn't right, because he times it so much with that leg. Like it comes down, it's so smooth when it works.
It's nice too, because it's like nice in a sense. Like it's, you know, it's not your perfect swing, but I think as we kind of move more and more into a more sensical way of developing players, where you can't just create carbon copies. You just go with what they're good at. Like this is the thing that got him to there. And yeah. So why would you mess with it just to make it where, you know, you tweak around the edges and things of that nature. But even like, you know, he's not going out of the zone very much. His sense of his strike zone is absolutely insane. And like, it's, you know, it's one thing to say, oh, well, he faced the Royals four games, but like Zach Greinke's a good pitcher. Zach Greinke against a rookie in his first game is not very fair. Yes. Obviously you don't have very much tape on him if you're Kwan, but at the same time, like,
and his triple today was off Scott Barlow too, so like he's facing
yeah,
a couple of legit pitchers. Yeah,
yeah. Like the Royals have good pitchers. You know, they've spent a lot of time in the basement. They've collected a bunch of hard throwing guys, and he's turning their pitches around all over the place too, just spraying the ball all over the park, which is, I don't know, awesome. I guess pretty cool. Really, just cool stuff. I'm all about this line drive hitting left fielder who just makes contact constantly. I wish they'd kept the one they had before, and then you know, also had Stephen Kwan. But what are you gonna do?
I think the comparison that comes to my mind with this, at least so far, I haven't seen many people make it, and probably because the reason I don't think it works either is like Yermín Mercedes, who came up last year and was the same kind of thing. But like, he was a good story because he'd been in the minors so long, and he came up literally out of nowhere. And that was just a thing. Like, it looked like a guy was just on fire for however long they fell off a cliff. But I feel like Stephen Kwan is almost the opposite. Like, his was a slow build. There were people who noticed in college his command of the strike zone. More people noticed as he went through the minors. And like this last year, this last offseason, he was getting like 70 grade on his hit tool from some scouts. So like people were noticing this is out of nowhere to start this hot, but it's not like he's an unknown quantity. He should have probably been, if evaluators are tracking him as close as they did last year all throughout his career, I think he'd been a lot higher before he even debuted. So he's probably like a top prospect. He's just not a big, tall guy like a lot of the guys. He's like 5'9", 170, just a little guy who hits the ball over the field without a ton of like classic power, I guess you call it. He's not crushing the ball, but he just hits so many line drives.
Yeah, line drives. He's done it all the way through. Yeah, I mean, he you always hear guys described as like gap-to-gap line drive hitters. And like you're like, what the hell does that mean? Like just crappy like this is what it means, obviously.
Yeah, like you see him hit a triple. Like when they're shifting on him, he still pulls it. And still
exactly, yeah. Like they're like the ability to not be able to be shifted upon. Like, what was that guy on the White Sox last year? They traded the Carter.
Nick Madrigal?
Yeah, Nick Madrigal. Yeah, he's the same.
They were on the same team, by the way.
Exactly. I was going to say, yeah, same team. I know they were on the same team as Allie Rutschman, too, at Oregon State. But yeah, same vibe, same kind of team. And like, it's not like I'm sitting here expecting Stephen Kwan to, you know, become the next, I don't know, Ichiro Suzuki or something like that. I'll accept it. I'll take it. Let's do that. But at the same time, it's so early in the year that there's so much noise in a guy who is it's like a 1700 OPS, whatever it is. Like, there's tons of noise there. It's a mess. And like, but the fact that he's pulling all those walks, and again, against not bad pitching, like, it's not, you know, to go back to Greinke, it's not Greinke throwing 100 miles an hour like it was 12 years ago, but it's still Greinke, who was a borderline ace a year or two ago and who still is one of the most cerebral pitchers in the game. Yeah, and obviously he like doesn't have the stuff he used to, but he's still good and he's still talented. Yeah. And you know, the other guy's not quite so much. Charles Hernandez, for instance, not a wonderful pitcher, but what are you going to do?
and every other pitcher they torched on Sunday. Yeah, there's a couple of good believers in there. You still got to hit off. Regardless of who you're hitting against, like, I mean, if you can see the ball the way he does, and the way he just like throws his wrists at the ball is amazing when it's timed up with his leg kick. Like, I don't know. He's just so fun to watch at this point.
There were a couple hits there where you're just like, I think that they had to be driven in part by where they were playing, if that makes sense, right? Because
it's a huge outfield.
Yeah, the outfielders have to play so deep. There's just all this space there for bloops. So I fully expect that once they come back to Cleveland, there's going to be some disappearing hits, but I don't care. Right now, it's cool. And like, I think this is something to build off of. And it's the thing that we've been wanting to happen since forever, where they just find a little bit of, you know, a little more gold.
Yeah, to, you know, find some outfielder that can do anything for them.
Yeah. Like, even if he hits, you know, I mean, I don't know, 300 or the 450 slugging percentage, like, whatever, I'll take it. That's a fun, different kind of hitter. And especially as the shift is phased out, he'll just be more and more dangerous with every passing day. And just the kind of guy who, you know, lengthens the lineup. I've gotten tired, by the way, of saying I just want average hitters. I'm gonna start, because I got cursed by that, because we got some guys who are exactly like 100 OPS plus guys, and I'm just like, well, all we want is productive hitters. So maybe that means like 110 to 120 OPS plus. Maybe let's get that. So let's get more of those. That's what I want out of this lineup. Just a bunch of guys with an OPS over 110. You know, that's not too much to ask, is it?
And Steamer, for what it's worth, it predicts him. I don't know why it projects him to have so many home runs. 15 home runs, the 286, 370, 450 slash line. So a 126 WRC plus. Like, that's amazing. Like, yeah, I'll take that every day.
He already has one home run expected. It's just, again, like, because of where he's playing, it was not a home run. I rewatched that hit. It was the one that hit the base of the wall, I think in right field, maybe.
Yeah.
And, then, and that's a distance, so.
Yeah, there's a Twitter account called Would It Dong that tracks that, which I love the name of it. Because, like, would it be a – there's a Bing Bong account that tracks Bing Bong, and there's one called Would It Dong.
What's a would Bing it, Bong?
A Bing. You ever saw the Cleveland Bing Bong account?
No.
Tweets out Bing Bongs. Calls home runs Bing Bongs.
Oh, Bing Bong. Okay. All right. I thought it was Bing Bong, like the New York Knicks situation.
What? The TikTok? No, I don't think it's that. It's just hit a big Bing Bong, and they go far. But on the other side of the ball, the offense has been amazing the last couple. Kind of surprising. The starting rotation has been not terrible, but probably shakier. I would have thought less strikeouts than I would have imagined at this point against the Royals.
Well, high contact guys. I mean, you know, it's a perfect storm of the kind of guy that's irritating for a team like the Guardians to play, just because the way they've been drafting for all these years is guys who are kind of high contact, put in a play types. So maybe that's an explanation. I haven't looked into it. Maybe they swing earlier in counts. But like you said, like, Bieber didn't look dominant on opening day.
I mean, his velocity was down by a whole. I think everybody's was a little bit. Part of that's probably because it was so freaking cold on opening day, and also they had a short spring.
Very much like, yeah, like a short spring. He doesn't pitch. He pitched what, like 4 games last year or something like that. Like, but then Plesac looked fine. Quantrill is not going to be a strikeout guy anyway. He was everything I would hope him for, and then Savali getting shelled on Monday was less than encouraging. I kind of speed watched some of his start, and I forgot how awful I hate. I just hate watching him pitch sometimes because so many like slow pitches in the top of the zone.
I'm like, yeah, I was going to say he did everything bad that you said he probably shouldn't do, which is a bunch of like slower pitches up in the zone. He couldn't stay along the top of the zone. He got too high up with his fastball, and then it was just like the meatballs were up there. And I feel like against a real team, those are going to get hit a lot more. There was a lot of hard contact.
No, there was a tremendous amount. Yeah, I was just looking at the baseball savant of that, and he got, I mean, he had 5 hard hits, I guess, however you want to describe
hard
that.
Hard hit hits, yeah.
Hard hit balls. There we go. Which I mean, again, it's you gave up, what, only gave up 4 hits, but it's the walks that really killed him. And he's just not a guy you can really work with not walking people. He's always been a pound the zone type of pitcher, so. Again, I definitely still the most intriguing, I think, pitcher on the staff, even including Quantrill, but he did not do anything to make me feel hyper confident about him on Monday.
I'm still kind of disappointed that Tristan McKenzie was just kind of shoved in there at the back end of Bieber's start. I got that was the point they were doing, but also I just kind of want to see Tristan McKenzie get his damn start again. I mean, he didn't look great either in the loss they had.
No.
I mean, Plesac was the most surprising by far because I didn't think he'd be. I thought this would be the year like we'd kind of show that he wasn't as good as 2019, and he came out and looked really good against the Royals. He went the longest out of all the starters.
Mm-hmm.
With confidence. 3 strikeouts. Yeah, he was good. He still lost because that was the one that nobody scored until Emmanuel Clase allowed a single run.
Game. Dumb game. My least favorite one of the entire weekend. Garbage game. They're calling it a trash game.
That was the one I didn't watch, and I'm not too sad that I missed it. So it didn't seem great.
No, but you know, again, what are you going to do? That's one of those just kind of knife edge games, and early in the season, like, yeah, it sucks to lose a close one like that. But I feel like that happens with the Royals all the time, just because they play good defense and they don't score very much, and so it just, especially in Kansas City, it just seems to like grind you into dust. Or if one thing goes wrong for them, they just collapse like a house of cards. So
like a house of cards, man.
Like one big house of cards.
As for the bullpen, Brian Shaw, pretty much what you expect. Used too much, collapsed, imploded. What do you want? Use them every single day. It's going to happen a little bit.
Yeah, let's not. You know what? We got to get away from this whole Brian Shaw thing. I gotta be honest with you. I'm a little over that. Yeah, a little over the whole Brian Shaw situation. I think we should move on.
But I mean, Nick Sandlin, who saved Brian Shaw today and then pitched a clean inning, he's still extremely fun to watch with his weird submarine sidearm, whatever you want to call it, delivery. I feel like that alone, just changing the perspective, messed with the Royals hitters a lot. I want to see him have a whole season healthy, and coming out of the bullpen like that is something I'm excited for.
Yeah, him. I mean, between him and who's the other one I was very excited for? Ghost, of course.
Oh, yeah. I don't think, has Ghost pitched yet? I guess he did, didn't he?
Ghost did pitch. Yeah, he pitched on Sunday, I think. Sunday. It must have been Saturday because I was just listening to the one on the rate. I had a real like a grown up man morning or afternoon on Sunday because I was listening to the game on the radio while I did some woodwork. Halfway through, I was like, woodwork. God damn, I should get like a beer or something because I'm really going to build a tableau. I was wearing a flannel and everything. I was like, I built a real tableau over here, just kind of a real vibe. But yeah.
In like your DC suburb backyard.
Exactly.
In the wilderness.
I'm just out here just working the wood, just, you know, just chopping these trees down. And I did not buy this piece of wood at the hardware store. No. No, sir.
Pre-cut. I just had to cut the tape off and get the zip tie off of it so it split apart.
Shut up. I'm really feeling seen right now. I don't like it.
Oh, and Eli Morgan, too. He looked like a man in the back of a D.C. suburb there with his I thought he looked really good on the back of the bullpen. The fact that he could just use his really weak fastball, but also that changeup I saw caught a couple Royals off guard was cool.
Trying to his way home, through.
Yeah. That's going to be in the bullpen. I liked him as a starter at one point, but I think he just only has, like, 2 pitches that are going to work. And without a fastball, that's not great. Like, you can just use a changeup and get him off guard.
Yeah, just trash your way through an inning or two and go, yeah, it's, tricked him again. It was definitely definitely didn't feel nervous the entire time. Very good.
Logan Allen was out there sweaty. I said on Twitter, he looked like he was lost at sea to work on his pitching because he's got like a beard. He's got long hair now. He's just straight up.
You didn't read that story about how over the offseason he rented out an oil tanker and he was just out there in international waters just working on his pitch and he got caught in a hurricane a few times? Yeah, it was a whole thing. I mean,
yeah. How could I miss that? He met Robert Redford out there and they just had a little trip.
Yeah, it was a whole little thing, you know, and then you just got his boat stuck in the Suez Canal. I mean, what are you going to do? Whoops.
Whoopsie-daisy.
Remember that?
You had plenty of time to pitch. That wasn't
I wasn't going anywhere, so I might as well just get a couple sessions in.
Very Remember good. When we learned that our whole global economy can be stopped by one boat in a river? That was fun. Let's see. Anything else out of the bullpen stick out to you? I don't think Sam Hentges did much of anything. Anthony Castro, the new guy they got for Bradley Zimmer. I didn't even include that in the rundown that they traded Bradley Zimmer.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, we forgot about that. Yeah, hey, no Bradley Zimmer. It really kind of loosens, the infamous logjam of mediocrity sure is starting to loosen up here, which is nice.
A little bit. I mean, actually, if Oscar Mercado is legit, too, like, it's suddenly a long jab runs, of pretty good. Yeah,
two homers in four games, like, he's hitting the ball hard. They said he put on 20 pounds of muscle. I was listening to the radio, and I was like, that can't be right.
A little beefier. I don't know about 20 pounds of muscle beefy, but...
That's so much muscle.
There's some power there, yeah.
Like... He turned
on that ball today. Like, he crushed that thing. He's got to have some more power.
Both his home runs were not cheap. Like, I mean, they're never cheap in that park, but like, he hit the piss out of both of them. Maybe he's good. I don't know. Maybe this is, it's happening again, Matt. It's happening again.
You're getting sucked in. The optimism levels are rising.
At least Zimmer's not there to trick me.
We're going to listen to this podcast in like a month when they're like 12 and 13, like, god damn it, we were so happy.
He's hitting 190 somehow getting four at bats.
Stephen Kwan was demoted after a week for no reason. Stat line is still like 700.
Oh, that'd be the best. Yeah, we're getting, he needs a little more seasoning. He's hitting, he's leading the world in hitting. Just hit two home runs. You know what, though? We want to see him get consistent at bats. You control his at bats, you can do anything you want.
It's just straight up a good outfield. If Oscar Mercado's good, I mean, you got Kwan, Straw, Mercado. I mean, that's scary good.
I mean, I'll say, there's a couple of non-bright spots. Bobby Bradley looked a little shitty.
Well, I mean, like, Owen Miller started against a right-hander. If he's legit, again, I'm getting sucked up, too. Look at me getting excited, but...
I don't know, man.
I mean, if he's your first baseman...
Yeah, I was piecing some together revolving around him for a meatball. I was like... Because they were talking about how he's going to be more pull-heavy this year, and...
Who was that, Miller?
Miller. And he pulled the ball a lot this weekend. Like, I think he only had one or two batted balls to the opposite field. And last year he was primarily like a kind of a slap hitter. I spent like 45 minutes or so just kind of watching clips from last year versus this year to see if he's changed anything. It seems all the same, but maybe he's getting his foot down a little earlier or something. And right-handed pull hitters can be very successful because you can't shift on them as easily because you need to have a first baseman. And then obviously once they start doing away with the shift, it's going to be even easier for him. But he's always had a pretty good hit tool. Like, you look at his minor league numbers, he's always been an average guy. Hitting for average, I mean.
I mean, we can shift to Owen Miller talking. Like, is this the arrival of Owen Miller finally? The one that was prophesized that was amazing in AAA, AA, all the way up, and then hit the majors last year and just kind of fell over on his face. Like,
they can't all be Stephen Kwan.
Can't all be Stephen Kwan, but I mean, what if he's the Stephen Kwan of a couple months after he debuts instead of Stephen Kwan? 60 games last year, he looked like crap. 49 WRC plus, but I mean, this year, man, he looks like a legit hitter all over the place. Then again, everybody did. So
I want to say that the park probably robbed him of a home run, but one of his doubles on Monday might not have been a double in another park because it kind of hit Merrifield in the glove. He was sliding. He was kind of a pseudo diving catch, but still, the other double was just a blast, and I think it was the hardest hit ball on the team on Monday. But he looks more comfortable at the plate. Like you said, he's hitting against righties. He's not performing as a platoon guy. If that's the case, then...
I think that's the biggest indicator that at least the Guardians believe in him. And also a very big damnation of Bobby Bradley if they're already abandoning the platoon. That seemed like the plan from the beginning was to platoon him and Bradley, and already one right-hander in, and they've abandoned that, so...
And like you wonder, like, how far do you let that go? You know what I mean? Because on Tuesday, or I think they have Tuesday off, don't they? On Wednesday, they're going to play.
No, they play Tuesday.
Tuesday. Okay, they're playing Cincinnati. I don't know who's going to be pitching for that in that game, but man, because I don't know anything about the Reds. They traded everybody.
The Reds don't know anything about the Reds. Yeah, they're just
ship at this point. I guess Tyler Mahle is slated to pitch. He's been fine, you know. I mean, career 4.30 ERA. He does lead the league in games started and ERA and win-loss percentage so far this year, though, and hits per nine. So that's good. He's right-handed, though, so I think that'll be a very interesting thing to see is on Tuesday who's going to hit, because you can see the argument for going with Bradley, wanting to give maybe Owen Miller a day off, although he's young. Why do the young guys need days off? Or you can see them going with Miller because, again, he's collected six hits in his last two games. Do you ride the hot hand? Do you continue to let him be comfortable? What do you do? These are the questions. And I think that's a very interesting thing to kind of keep an eye on, because Molly's not a dominant pitcher by any stretch of the imagination. He's good. He's not great or anything like that. But
yeah, riding a hot hand would be weird, I think, four games in. But maybe not, because I would also not bench Stephen Kwan for anything right now. So maybe I can't talk.
Well, like, and like all these young guys, like, you know, like we feel as though we've seen Owen Miller a lot, but this is, again, he's played, what, 65 games or something like that at this point combined. So he, riding the hot hand is, you know, it's one thing to say, but it's also like giving the kid the confidence that you believe in him to, you know, like, I don't want them to see them just dump Bobby Bradley just unceremoniously, because I'd like for him to get some play too. But
this, again, is basically what we've been asking him to do, is just let these kids get consistent playing time, and then are doing it with Owen Miller, hopefully. So
yeah, but so yeah, I don't know where you go from there, but it's like, is this again another looming logjam of mediocrity where they try and just like halfway figure things out? Because I want Bobby Bradley to kick ass. He hits the ball a quarter mile, and if Stephen, you know, exactly, therein lies the issue. But like, I love the kind of transition of like a slap contact, no power hitting guy like Miles Straw to Kwan to Ramirez to Reyes to Bradley, like in that exact order.
One through four, maybe five if one of them can hit.
It's like all contact, no power. Lots of contact, a little bit of power. Lots of contact, lots of power. No contact, some contact, lots of power. No contact, all the power in the world. Like, ooh, interesting. A little taste, a little amuse-bouche of everything you can have as an offensive hitter or offensive player. Very nice.
And then just remember, too, that Josh Naylor's coming back soon. So they're going to find, I mean, is he your first baseman? I feel like the plan was originally just to have Stephen Kwan up and then send him down. Absolutely nobody can do that now. Unless he... I can't imagine how bad he'd have to be over 2 days to justify doing that. So, I mean, you're going to have to cut somebody because everybody's out of options. Like, is Mercado, if he keeps playing well, do you cut him? I feel like Bobby Bradley's just going to be the odd man out. Or Yu Chang could be the odd man out because they have Ernie Clement. He's kind of redundant. No, right? I mean, they could option Ernie Clement. He has options, but I feel like Tito likes him too much. And he's proved a well enough utility guy. I feel like it's either Chang or Bradley, and probably Chang. The only knock on Bradley is he can only play first base, but also Chang can't hit, sadly, as much as I like Yu Chang. So I don't know. I feel it's gonna be one of those two, and Josh Naylor will be up, and then you've got to kind of just make Josh Naylor first baseman. I don't know where you put him in the outfield, unless you, I guess, he's a natural right fielder.
Well, you see, he's played there. Sure, he blew his knee out hideously while playing out there, but I mean,
the idea of putting him out there is
troubling.
Yeah, yes. I think it was Quincy Wheeler on Twitter who mentioned that he's not prepared to see a ball go to right field and not be comfortable about it anymore. Because it's true. Like, everywhere the ball goes in the outfield right now, you know it's probably going to be caught if it's supposed to. I mean, Stephen Kwan dropped one today, but that was because the sun was in his eyes. But as soon as Josh Naylor is out there again, like, I said, when a ball goes in the right field, it's going to be a heart attack every time.
I'm tired of adventurous defense. I want competent defense.
I just want competent outfielders catching balls, throwing balls, doing their thing. That's all I want.
I don't know. It's fun in a way for people in our seat, at least, who have to talk and or write about this team, because there's lots of like these moving pieces, and like I don't feel like miserable about them anymore. There's, especially with the, well, with the recent performance, and you know we're all prisoners of recency bias. The performances of Kwan and Miller especially, but then also the wanting of Bobby Bradley to kick ass, and obviously with Naylor coming back, it's very interesting just to see how they're going to fit it all in. I hope they don't fuck it up basically, and like start swapping people in and out at random. Like I think, you know, I don't know if you agree with that, but like I can't figure out where they are in their arc, I suppose, as a team. You know what I mean? Like, they're not good enough yet to compete with the really upper echelon guys yet. I think that if something that Kwan's doing here is something resembling a breakthrough, they need two other guys to continue to do that, right? Like,
yeah, and they're also gonna have the problem of like, where the hell do you play Owen Miller when Josh, if Naylor comes back and is your first baseman, that like causes cascading effect. If he's good, do you just keep swapping him in and out with Amed Rosario and Andres Jimenez? Like, that's not fair to any of those guys, especially because I don't think Amed Rosario is a very good defender. And if Jimenez has any kind of value left, I think it's as a shortstop.
Yeah, with an occasional hit, basically. That's I think that's what we're seeing out of him. Yeah. Like,
I don't know why he's not. I would not want him as an everyday second baseman on a winning team. I think I'd rather have Owen Miller at this point. And at least Jimenez has options. Like, so you can still option him if you need to.
That's true. I think the ideal here is Kwan leading off, and then Ramirez, and then Miller if he's hitting, or Naylor if he's hitting, and then Reyes, and then kind of go from there. I guess, you know, I guess your fifth could be Naylor in that case. Did I say Naylor already? I did say Naylor already. So I guess your fifth in that case would be Rosario, and then it just kind of fall off a cliff there after a while.
It's a really big cliff, yeah. And I get that. I think probably Kwan, Ramirez, whoever is the right order. It is kind of cool having Miles Straw, Stephen Kwan, Jose Ramirez. Like, having so much speed at the top there with Straw.
I agree. No, I like that, but like, I would almost say like, I'd almost prefer Straw at the bottom. But his on-base percentage is so good, it's like...
It's not like it's a detriment, yeah. So
no, exactly. He's not a great leadoff hitter, but he's a prototypical leadoff hitter, which I don't know if that makes you feel good about it or not, but it is what it is, so, you know.
I think this also takes them slightly out of the Brian Reynolds sweepstakes, if they're going to trade Daniel Espino for him. I don't think that happens anymore. Sadly for me, as much as I love Daniel Espino and as good as he looks and he's going to look, but
I guess we should probably talk about it too, because that came across today that they were talking with Michael Conforto.
Yeah, like straight up, where does he fit now?
Like at this point, these guys are good. I guess the thing we point out is Josh Naylor is all potential and no performance. If we're being quite honest, he hits the ball a quarter mile, but he also is incredibly inconsistent, strikes out too much, without the added benefit of being friendly on Reyes. So there's definitely space for him. I think if you had, you know, gun to my head, you have him, you have Mercado, and you have Naylor, which one's playing right field? I don't have to make a decision here because it's already been made for me.
You mean if it's Michael Conforto?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, yeah.
Precisely. So I don't know if that's – I don't know how real that is. I know he wants to play, but –
Well, to be fair, like the guy who leaked it, I don't have any doubt that he's right. I'm sure they were talking to him, but he's like a guy who's talking for an agent usually gets his leaks. So I think it's more likely that like another team is closer to signing him and they're saying like, look, if you don't sign him, we'll sign with Cleveland. They also want him, so you better pay us more money. But I would think like if they do sign Conforto, if somehow that happens, like a 1 or 2 year deal, which would be absolutely perfect for their situation, like you have to trade somebody at that point. There's just no more room. Like you've got to trade. I don't know, like Mercado, and you got to trade just any of these guys you can package along with some of the upper prospects and get like, hey, but then who do you get? Because you just signed an outfielder. It's hard to decide honestly, where you move all these guys.
I would honestly say, I mean, if that was really the move, I would say go after a bullpen arm because, you know, I mean, I think getting a, if they get Conforto, it's a statement of one to compete like hard. Right. And that gives them a really strong, probably 5 to 6 deep lineup. And then just, you know, the back end being a normal back end of a lineup, having a bullpen that would be class A, I don't know, whoever else it would be, I guess.
It's just class A and whatever is what the bullpen is right now.
I mean, yeah, I guess my, you know, class A, Sandal and Ghost, I suppose. I don't know. And then you kind of go from, and then adding another top flight arm in there, or even not even top flight, but just a guy who throws 100 of the wipeout slider, you know, just something normal like that. Would be very solidifying for the bullpen because they're going to need more arms because that, you know, circle by the rotation talk from earlier, not the most confident in the world. But again, you have to trust that it's early in the season. And
yeah, that'll straighten
point,
out, I think.
At this point, they're 2-2. Like, it's not like, the, you know, it's like the season's over by any stretch of imagination or anything has happened even.
Yeah, and they're all on weird limits from short spring. Like, I'm not buying too much into the struggles of the rotation quite yet, but you still want a good bullpen regardless.
Right. And like, you know, we're going to see Morgan get some starts. And we're going to see some of the other guys get some starts that we just haven't seen much of yet. But getting, I don't know. I would feel very confident getting another arm to specifically see less of Brian Shaw.
That's the whole goal here. Is just to see
Shaw. Yeah, the real focus here is to eliminate him from pitching very much. Circling his name and just putting a little X through it. It's kind of what I want to see here.
Now, the Guardians did extend, I mean, Class A among Miles Straw, Jose Ramirez. I think Miles Straw was the newest one. So they spent some money in the offseason just extending guys, didn't necessarily add anybody. But I think it's just worth looking at these three inside of deciding like who's next. I think there's no Stephen Kwan is like one that comes to mind, but there's probably not a worse time in history to extend Stephen Kwan right now.
Well, I mean, arguably.
No.
I agree with you. However, there's also the kind of like Ronald Acuna path, right? Where you give him a very long contract for very low money, you know, or what's his name? Evan Longoria, same vibe. He signed a contract his rookie year and he was good then. So I understand that being the idea of an argument, I suppose.
I think you wait for him to even out maybe a little bit, or maybe everybody can just be realistic enough to say that, hey, bud, you're not going to be doing this forever. So let's be realistic about what we're negotiating here. But I think at some point,
do you want $100 million? Ooh, over 12 years. Ooh. So, you know, yeah.
Yeah. I think at some point he will be a reasonable expectation to be extended. But I think also Cleveland tends to wait a little bit closer to arbitration.
Yeah. Not quite. Like 2 years in, I would think. Right. Yeah.
I mean, he has no service time. So,
right. He has 2 days of service time, effectively. Yeah.
I think like Franmil Reyes is an obvious candidate, especially like now, if you think he's going to rebound from this, you're getting him basically probably at the lowest point of his career. And you sign him now for a bunch of years buyout. What does he have? Like another year of arbitration, 2 years?
I think he has two more years. I'm looking up right now. Salaries. He's got one more year on his rookie deal.
Oh, there you go. So that seems about right in line. Like pay him.
Although he got $4.5 million last year. Never mind. He is entering arbitration.
I was going to say.
Early free agent 2025. Never mind. I'm an idiot. Okay.
But yeah, extend him through there. I mean, it'd be the same, almost the same deal. Just give him maybe like one extra option and get him through 2028 or just get him to 2027 and you have that core through at least then.
I was thinking Quantrill too. I mean, I know it's a little earlier than you were talking, but like I think last year was he's a little worse than that, but like – even if he's a number three or something like that, getting him for, I don't know, early arb eligible 2023 early free. Yeah, so I mean, I guess if you could extend him, maybe it's a little early on that one actually because he's a free agent 2026. If you could get him through 2028,
that's basically what they've done though because they're signing the guys who like through 2026 and got a couple options to get through the extra.
Yeah, so
years.
I mean,
and they've never hesitated to get these back at the end guys if that's all Quantrill is. They got Josh Tomlin. Remember they signed him for. Just to buy out arbitration, so
and like locking him in like that, and then best case scenario, he's absolutely electric. And last year was not a fluke, and I mean, you know, obviously he was driven a lot by batting average and balls and play and things of that nature and luck. But like, he also makes his own luck a little bit, and he looked, you know, he looked fine last year in his last time out. I think that he could. I think him and Reyes are probably the next two who they're probably going to try and get something done with. Probably not now.
I mean, probably done now for the year, yeah.
But yeah, like, it's a weird aversion to signing people. Although you never know. I mean, again, like the reason you have
agents. Straw
was technically
in the season, I think. It was after the first game.
Yeah, I mean, the reason you have agents is so they can do the business side where you go and play. So
yeah, I think the ship has sailed on Bieber. I think we're both assuming like you're not going to get him for a big deal at this point. Like he knows what he is. And
maybe. I mean, at the same time, like he's coming off an injury. I can see both sides of it, obviously, right? Like, I don't think he's going to want to sell himself cheap. He's still not going to be a free agent for another, 2 years, right? Earliest free agent 2025. So getting him through 2027, maybe? Not at a small deal. Like, nothing approaching, obviously, something like what Ramirez got, but...
Yeah, you're going to have to pay him pretty close to what he's going to get.
You're going to have to give him, like, $15 million a year minimum. So what would that be, like, a five-year... It'd be $60 million or $75 million. It's a massive underpay for a guy who, I mean,
is a literal Cy Young winner.
Yeah, exactly. He actually has a legitimate. Yeah, there it is, right there. Cy Young. Granted, it was Mickey Mouse season, et cetera, et cetera. But even with that, like he's been great for 3 years, basically. I mean, with the injury, you definitely have an argument on the other side of things. So
I would say those guys are probably the ones that I would circle. Quantrill, Bieber, and Reyes.
Yeah, which one? Fair.
Which one do I think is most likely? Probably Reyes, honestly. Followed by Quantrill, and they got to make the effort with Bieber.
Probably that's kind of have at this point, and probably nothing has come of it.
Yeah,
I feel like they probably have tried a bunch already, and a Class A signing a reliever feels like that was a once in a lifetime thing that the Guardians would do. They seem to realize that they're kind of glass cannons. So I think Nick Sandlin maybe would be a good option for that. I think he's going to be super good, but also he has not even a year of service time yet. So maybe not there, but I feel like they're just so comfortable plugging in random relievers and then pulling them out when their arms explode that I don't think they're going to sign many. I thought it was kind of surprising they did Class A in the first place, but
100 miles an hour on a cutter. I mean, yeah, it's like, whoa, that's pretty good. Actually, that's pretty good. Let's keep that around.
And if old Sticky Jim Karinchak could still pitch without the sticky stuff, I'm sure they might have considered that by now. But
yeah,
he's out. He's probably not good when he comes back. So
you're out. For that reason, you are out.
Austin Hedges, I would assume they're hoping to God they can get somebody before he's around for too long.
Well, they got Brian Levastida. He got it. Yeah. He got his first outing, right? He hit on Sunday. He didn't hit, but
he was in there.
He was hitting. He walked. That's on base percentage right there. Yeah, he drew a walk. He's good now, actually, it turns out. He's better. He's better than you thought.
Yeah, I think there's a decent chance Matt. He's the future catcher. Bo Naylor down there somewhere. He's kind of drifted off a little bit, but I like him too. I think Austin Hedges is just not one they're signing unless it's, hey, you want to be a backup in a few years?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I mean, I understand the value. I mean, that being said, they did it with Roberto Perez. Like, they signed him to a long-term deal.
Well, didn't they sign him when it was clear he was going to be the starter? Or was he? No, he was still behind Yan Gomes, wasn't he?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, he was still behind Yan Gomes. Where is he now? Is he playing?
Yan Gomes? I just saw someone talking
Not
about
Yan Gomes. No, Gomes.
No, Roberto's Gomes in Pittsburgh.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, Yan Gomes, that's right.
On the Cubs. Ew.
Yeah, Gomes on the Cubs. Yeah, I was watching a game today, so I was like, oh, that's right. That's so weird. Gross. Ugh.
Ew. Ooh,
spitting great. Noise. Spitting noise. Spitting noise. Ugh.
Yeah. On that note, Merritt, I think we're going to call it episode this week. It's a good one. Got some good first couple
weeks. And Matt, baseball's back.
Baseball is back. It's surprisingly
that's the
fun.
Baseball's back alarm. Everyone is that, just, you know.
Is that the baseball back alarm?
Yeah. I guess. Yep. Everyone loves it. Everyone loves the alarm.
Next week, depending on how things go, it might be
why did we play Brian Shaw so much?
But until then, if you haven't already, subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or really listen to podcasts, leave us a review. Let us know what you think of the show. Follow us on Twitter at Cover the Corner, on Facebook, Covering the Corner. Of course, coveringthecorner.com. Follow me at Matt RLY, Merritt at Merrill Lynch.
Merrill Lynch. I'm not a villainous investment bank. Damn.
Follow Merrill Lynch. Fuck this other guy. Merrill Lynch is actually my co-host.
Follow Merrill Lynch if you want some insight into.
Yeah, can you text Merrill Lynch about how much you love Stephen Kwan? Let him know just how good he is.
Yeah, see what they're saying. Just let him know
about how good Stephen Kwan is.
They're all about trends and buying low and selling high and things of that nature. Like, who should they be signing? You know, actually, maybe we should reach out to Merrill Lynch, man.
Have them co-host an episode and just not
mention
it.
Yeah, just see what they say. Yeah, what are their thoughts?
It'll just be silence on the sign of a cash register every once in a while.
Cha-ching. Yeah, that's right, Merrill Lynch.
I agree. Talk to you next week, Merritt.
Later on.